IVM.
Welcome to All Things Policy, a daily podcast supported by Pragati, a flagship media initiative of the Takshashila Institution. We're a bunch of policy nerds based in Bengaluru, and we like to bring a fresh perspective to Indian affairs and an Indian perspective to global affairs. So grab a cup of coffee, sit back, and join us for today's chat.
Hello and welcome to All Things Policy. In late February this year, Russian President Vladimir Putin announced that Russia will stop its participation in the New START Treaty, the last remaining bilateral agreement between the United States and Russia. The news of the announcement generated a good deal of alarm and misinformation. To dismiss some of this alarm and misinformation, Aditya Ramanathan and I will discuss the nuances of the situation and provide our assessment of the US-Russia arms control relationship. Hi, Aditya.
Hi, Pranav.
Well, let's talk about how Russia came to suspend the New START Treaty, which was negotiated in 2010. How did we get here? Let's rewind to 2019, perhaps, or 2020, and let's talk about what's happening since then.
Sure, Pranav. Yeah, it's not been a great last few years for arms control, especially nuclear arms control. 2019, you saw the American withdrawal from the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, as well as the withdrawal from participation in the Open Skies Treaty. And in 2020, once the pandemic started, you know, mutual inspection between Russia and the United States for the New START Treaty got suspended. It basically didn't take place. And in the beginning, this wasn't necessarily something you worried about too much. A New START was one of those treaties that were held up as an example, as the one treaty that would buck the trend. But what's happened really since then is that you not just had a lack of these inspections. In 2022, the Russians actually stopped giving permission or approving on-site inspections by the two sides. And in February, the Russians, as you said, Pranav, actually suspended their participation in the treaty. It's been obviously the big shadow that hangs over the treaty right now is the Ukraine war. So, you know, following the pandemic, we've had this war in Ukraine, and you've actually had instances where, for example, Ukrainian forces, primarily Ukrainian long-range UAVs, have attacked Russian bomber bases. Now, this is something that has been explicitly cited by the Russians, including by Vladimir Putin, as an example of essentially the United States threatening Russia's own nuclear sites, its own nuclear facilities. And the argument goes, well, you are literally attacking us through your Ukrainian proxies, and then you want to come and do on-site inspections. This is laughable. That's sort of the Russian rationale. And that's kind of where we are. So then the bilateral consultative commission meetings have also been suspended by the two sides. And we're at an impasse here. We don't know where the New START Treaty goes from here, which is kind of disappointing because, like I said, it was that one treaty that was supposed to work well. But, I mean, having said that, given the fact that we are at an impasse, Pranav, isn't it too early to just declare that this treaty is dead? I get the sense that both sides haven't given up on it, right? Like the Russians haven't withdrawn, they've just suspended their own participation. So that holds open the promise that they can come back.
Yes, quite a lot of reports on news sites have said Russia has withdrawn from the treaty or, oh, New START is dead. But the Russians have used a very specific phrase which has some legal implications. And as I said earlier in the introduction, the Russians have merely suspended their participation in the New START Treaty. And what it means is that they're not withdrawing, they're not invoking the withdrawal clause, which is a 6-month notification that you give. And after 6 months, you withdraw, which means that you are not bound by any of the commitments whatsoever. Suspension merely means that you may or may not stick to the limits of the treaty, but you will basically not include all the other clauses. For example, allowing inspectors to come into your country, exchanging information. And you create this whole set of ambiguity about what you're doing because you're providing no information whatsoever, even though you're within the treaty itself. And this was done so because the Vladimir Putin and the Russian state Duma, which actually passed the bill to stop participation. In both these cases, members of the State Duma and Vladimir Putin have said that this is reversed, the suspension is reversible. And in the context, Putin gave quite a very, very long speech. And in the speech, Putin kept saying that this is a war that has been causing. It's NATO that has been participating without shame. They've been supplying billions of dollars of equipment, essentially calling for Russia's complete destruction. And Putin said, you know, once you reverse these actions, we could perhaps work a nuclear deal out once again. So it is really linked to the Ukraine war. There is no ambiguity about it. But the whole clause of suspension, there is no suspension clause within the New START treaty itself. You cannot suspend your participation. You can either withdraw completely or you can stay within the treaty and allow every clause to be implemented the way it is. However, members of the State Duma particularly cited the 1972 Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties. The Vienna Convention on the Law of Treaties governs how laws are implemented or international treaties are implemented. And one of the clauses, Article 62, says that treaties can be suspended under extreme circumstances where there are fundamental changes of circumstances. And this is what the Russian State Duma has invoked, that the war that is where NATO is supporting Ukraine indirectly and calling for Russia's annihilation is an extraordinary change in circumstances because of which the Russians cannot participate. But the same clause also, the same treaty, the Vienna Treaty, also has another clause, 1972, where it says that even though parties suspend the treaty, so long as they have not withdrawn from the treaty, they are bound by the clauses. So it says that even if you withdraw from the treaty, you still have to implement the treaty, even though you provide no information, you still have to implement the treaty. So the New START treaty could, in essence, be in an ICU, perhaps. It is awaiting a surgery. This is what the Russians may call it.
That's dismal. So what you're saying is that even after the Russian suspension of participation, they may still have to abide by it?
Yes, that's what if you go by the clauses they have invoked, or the treaty they have invoked, the Vienna Convention, the same treaty also says, well, you have to abide by it even if you suspend your participation. What we're talking about participation here is that you don't exceed what are called treaty limiting items, the ICBMs, the nuclear warheads, and the number of missiles that you place, the number of bombs that you place inside your bombers and submarines. You still can't substantially increase the number of missiles that you place inside your submarines. And we saw this even with the SALT II treaty that was negotiated and signed in 1979, but the US never ratified it. But they still continue to participate in it because the way international law works is that even if your country has not ratified it, you are bound by the time it has taken to negotiate the treaty to stay within the treaty.
Right, yeah. You know, what's interesting is when you look at this in the context, broader context of these nuclear arms control agreements, it gives you a broader sense of where New START stands. I mean, you had, if you're going back to the Cold War and the detente, you had a period of rapid arms control agreements, right? Starting with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty all the way through SALT, SALT II, the ABM Treaty through the 70s and up to 79. Then you had the Russian invasion of Afghanistan and that kind of put an end to those negotiations. But still the INF Treaty, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, came out in 1987, once Gorbachev had come to power and there was, a thawing of relations. Of course, it had been in negotiations since 1979. And what we've seen since then, the good news sort of continued immediately after the Cold War, with START and then New START in what we would broadly call the post-Cold War period.
Yeah,
I think enough time has passed that we no longer need to call our times the post-Cold War period. We don't know what exactly to call it, but what's clear is that a lot of these arms control agreements have clearly been falling apart. And we've been talking about this quite a bit in All Things Policy, right? So the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty came apart in 2002. The Americans had been quietly building up their missile defense capabilities. And by 2002, you had a confluence of political and technological factors coming together. You had both rising capabilities for missile defense and the shadow of 9/11, which gave the Americans sort of political cover they needed to withdraw from the Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. And in 2019, the Americans also withdrew from the INF Treaty. And this was probably the result of a few both technological and political factors. The technological factors are simply that actually the same ones that actually, led to the withdrawal from the ABM, which is simply that missiles get more accurate. And so you can actually think of using conventional instead of nuclear missiles for some purposes. The broader political factors are, I think, basically both states wanting other things. So the Americans did allege that the Russians had a missile, the Novator 9M729, which they claimed violated the INF Treaty. So the INF Treaty basically banned ground-based missiles with ranges between 500 and 5,500 kilometers.
Yeah.
And this fell into that. And similarly, the Russians had their own perspective. For example, they saw a lot of the target missiles that Americans used to test their ballistic missile defenses. They believe that those violated the INF Treaty. Similarly, I think there was a Mark 41 test launch vehicle. The Russians basically claimed all of these things.
And the Russian went far as to claim that even the interceptor missiles for the missile defenses could be converted to ballistic missiles and used as INF range missiles.
Yeah, which sounds a bit far-fetched, but is probably, technically doable. So, there are all these mutual allegations going between the two countries. I think the other fundamental factor is simply, we talked about accuracy, rising accuracy. The Americans started seriously considering having conventional missiles in that 500 to 5,500 kilometer range for deployment in Asia as a sort of, basically to deter primarily China's own theater missiles, whole zoo of theater missiles that it has, as well as potentially North Korea. So it's also strategic circumstances changing. And I think those conspired to bring an end to that treaty. I think you can make a reasonable case that New START was different. Another treaty that did kind of fall apart was Open Skies. Again, it's not that significant, and it's only the Americans and Russians that have withdrawn from it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's indicative of the lack of trust and general atmosphere, which is not conducive to nuclear arms control.
But with the New START, with the suspension of New START, no side was actually violating any outright violation.
Exactly.
With the ABM treaty, we saw going as far as with the Reagan administration, they were really pushing it to its limits. There was one clause about broad interpretation about testing and development of ABM range missile defenses. And the Americans were almost going to take all their design and development out of the lab with their so-called broad interpretation. So there was a clear reason. They really, really wanted to violate the treaty. And perhaps even the Russians wanted to violate the INF treaty because they were really, really being ambiguous about these missiles without providing additional information. But in New START, nobody wanted to violate it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, going back to ABM, if you think that the Russians are violating INF with the 9M729 missile, the Americans were definitely violating the ABM with their so-called broad interpretation, right? But yeah, I mean, that's the curious thing about New START is that both sides at least seem to want it and at least seem to be cooperating. And this cooperation survived the 2014 Russia-Ukraine war. And I think it was not unreasonable to imagine that it might just survive this one as well. But the fact, I think, that this war has imposed such a large cost on Russia, and the fact that important Russian bases have been attacked from Ukraine, with American help, I think has basically put a great deal of strain on this treaty. The other thing is, if you're Russian, you really want to use all the levers you have right now because you're not in a great position. So you want to use all the levers you have to put pressure on the Americans to end the war in some way that both sides can live with.
Yeah, and arms control relationships are extremely uneasy because you're really trying to, stay in the same house as your enemy. And it's an extremely and now we are testing the limits of that uneasy relationship. And unfortunately, I don't want to say unfortunately because it might not be unfortunate, but it really shows that these things can't really be sustained if your relationship with your adversary is extremely bad. So to speak about bad things, Aditya, let's talk about some bad scenarios that we can imagine since suspended the New START treaty. And before I say that, the Americans actually gave a clarification fact sheet which said the Russians are non-compliant, which is very different from them saying they're violating. By non-compliance, they mean that Russians are not abiding by their commitments to exchange information, allow on-site inspections. They're not accusing them of material violation, that is outright increasing the number of missiles. So the Americans don't recognize the suspension because the suspension has no legal basis within the treaty itself.
Stay tuned to All Things Policy. We'll be right back after a short commercial break.
So what are the bad scenarios that you think are possible, Aditya?
Wow. Okay. So I think simpler bad scenarios would be simply things like, so the New START treaty basically makes a distinction between warheads that are basically kept in storage and those that are actually actively deployed. And I think one thing that both countries could do, but perhaps especially Russia, is pull those nukes out of the basement and deploy them again. And I think that would definitely work as a signal to the other side that, at least to pressure them into maybe trying to come to some sort of new deal. One other is that you could, New START puts limitations on the number of warheads on missiles. So for example, the US can increase the number of warheads on a Minuteman III missile from 1 to 3. And that could essentially, now since there's no verification mechanism here, it would probably require an announcement from the Americans, but that would clearly be you know, a major violation of the treaty. As of now, I'm not sure that the Americans will violate it themselves. I think the only time that they will violate it is as a reaction to something that the Russians do. I think we're more likely to see something from the Russian side.
And I think putting 3 warheads on a Minuteman missile by itself is not a violation, because there's no limits on the number of warheads you can put on a missile. But they should not exceed the overall ceiling of 1,550.
Yeah.
And the treaties are designed in such a way that it gives both sides flexibility on how to place their nuclear weapons on which platform. So the Americans chose to keep their Minuteman missiles with 1 warhead, even though it's technically capable of holding 3. So if they increase to 3 warheads, they would increase the warhead ceiling by many fold, clearly violating the treaty.
Yeah, but let's say, see, here's the thing. Let's say they, it's interesting, right? So let's say they increase the number of warheads to 3 on the Minutemans, but they reduce something else, maybe something from the bomber force, and they provide all the necessary notifications to the Russians. It would be kind of funny.
That's not a violation.
That's not a violation. Exactly. But anyway, yeah. So I think those are some of the simpler scenarios of violations. But, you know, if nothing comes into place, if there's no deal, if the war continues, you could think of even worse things. I mean, you could think of, you know, the development of new nuclear forces, new types of missiles, new types of warheads. Things can get pretty bad. And, you know, those things in themselves can create the incentive to come up with some sort of new arms control agreement in the future. Of course, all of that is still far off. It's clear that the Russians are, you know, have not closed the door behind them, and they might want to come back. And so I think there's always that possibility. And I'm sure there are smart diplomats on both sides trying to figure out how that will happen.
Yeah. In fact, smart diplomats are also the one who created this fascinating legal loophole, which is given interest very mysterious. It's not very often that our country suspends a treaty. It's only Russia that's been suspending treaties. They did that with a treaty called the Conventional Forces in Europe Treaty, of which we have done a podcast in 2020. In early 2020, we did a podcast about how conventional arms control actually came up and it died as soon as it was born. So it's an interesting legal scenario that's been created. And in my final thoughts, I think the most difficult position for the Russians and the Americans will be to have a follow-on agreement. In 2021, President Joe Biden, Vladimir Putin, extended to 2026, the treaty to 2026, which everyone said, wow, that's a fantastic thing. We've extended the treaty. And they also said, they also made a joint statement saying nuclear war cannot be won and must never be fought, which really is, in our opinion, does not really hold any substance. The biggest thing would be negotiating a follow-on treaty, because these legal treaties take such a long time to negotiate. New START was a very unique case because it was negotiated in a hurry within 1 year. But most arms control treaties at least take 4 years or 3 to 4 years to negotiate. So coming up with a follow-on treaty after New START actually ends in 2026 is very difficult. There's no real time to come up with a follow-on treaty.
On that cheerful note, yeah, you know, I don't think there's a lot of great news around strategic arms control, unfortunately, but it is an interesting space and there is enough work to be done to make sure, you know, that the bottom doesn't fall off and that we can still figure out ways to come up with new kinds of structures for arms control in the future. So I guess, Pranav, we're going to keep doing many more of these episodes in the future.
Yeah. Thank you, Aditya. And thank you very much for joining us on All Things Policy.
If you liked our show, don't forget to check out other interesting podcasts on the IVM network. You can tune into them on the IVM Podcast app, ivmpodcast.com, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow IVM on social media. The handle is @IVMPodcasts on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And hey, if you'd like to dive into Takshashila's research on technology, strategy, and economic affairs, check us out at our Twitter handle, @TakshashilaInst, or our website, takshashila.org.in.